actually the book of Ruth, chapter number 4 in our Bibles. And I want to share a little something here with you all tonight. Try not to keep you too terribly long.
Where are you going to be?
Ruth, chapter 4.
Oh, Ruth.
Yes.
I know her. She married Boaz.
This is correct. But do something a little different here. And there's so much that we do have in our Bibles that we do tend to take for granted. Things that we read through it and we're done with it. Especially when it comes to genealogies. Name after name after name that are not important to us in the least. But
and
yet,
most of the names you can't pronounce.
This is correct. But if they were not of any consequence, then they wouldn't be in the Bible. Because there are no wasted words found in the Bible. Very grateful for that. Everything is there for a very specific reason. And I just...
Well, my Bible doesn't have Ruth.
So you're ruthless?
I've gone through all the pages and I don't see one. What did it come after or before?
Right after Judges and just before 1 Samuel.
Yeah, because I had to look it up too. I was going to say, yeah.
Oh, before 1 Samuel.
Yeah. It is the bridge between...
I was thinking it was the one just before Psalms, and that's Esther.
Yep, that's Esther.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is the bridge between Judges, the Judges, and the monarchy, and helps to establish why it is that 1 Samuel ends up dedicating so much time to David. Because this is giving us actually his background. But what I want to focus on specifically here is the last five verses of chapter number 4. And actually, we can go ahead and read verse number 17 of chapter 4. But really, we're going to focus on 18 through 22 real quickly. But verse 17 says, "And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, 'There is a son born to Naomi,' and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David." Now, the important thing here is verse number 18, and it says, "Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez begat Hezron. Hezron begat Ram. Ram begat Amminadab. Amminadab begat Nahshon. Nahshon begat Salmon. And Salmon begat Boaz. And Boaz begat Obed. And Obed begat Jesse. And Jesse begat David." Now, there's something really interesting here with these names. There, when you get down here to verse number 18, and you read from the beginning of verse 18 to the very last word, which is the name of David, here in verse number 22, you find that there are 10 names that are listed. And these 10 names, they are here for a very specific reason. And along with that specific reason is the interesting idea that this genealogy here actually begins with Perez instead of his dad Judah, who the tribe of Judah is named after. Instead, it begins with his son Perez. So why would there be 10 names that are listed here in 18, 19, 20, 21, and finally in 22? That it ends with David. And the answer to that actually goes back, and I'll just go ahead and read the verse for you. It goes all the way back to Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse number 3, where God says, "And an Amorite or a Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord." Now, Ruth is of what nationality? She's a Moabitess. She's from Moab. So a Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to their 10th generation shall they not enter into the congregation of the Lord forever. So by starting with Perez, and we believe that it's Samuel who actually sat down and wrote the book of Ruth, the writer, either way it goes, began with Perez so as that he can have 10 names that would culminate in David. If he had started with Judah and it finished off with David, it'd be 11. It would throw it off. It would not line up with Deuteronomy 23, verse number 3 at all. It is needed to bring Ruth into Israel. Not just into the land, because she's there in the land, obviously. She marries a Hebrew, okay? She's, you know, married a... Boy, I blanked on Boaz's name that quickly. Wow. She married Boaz. So by marriage, she's now Hebrew. But the whole thing is there's that stipulation because of how the Amorites and the Moabites dealt with the Israelites when they first came out of Egypt and they've got the wilderness wanderings. Instead of being friendly toward them because they're distant cousins, they would attack them and curse them and do all these other things. So God says, hey, for 10 generations, y'all don't get to come in. Now, God has the author here backdate it to Perez. 10 generations, Perez to David. David is the culmination of it all because we get with David the Davidic covenant, which establishes that the line of the Messiah, the chosen one who will sit forever on the throne of David, comes through David. So by allowing for the list here to end with David, it allows Ruth to fully, 100%, come into a covenantal relationship with God. Now, something that is also a little bit interesting too, you know, we're going through here with David and the line of Judah. So this is the kingly line that is being established here. If I were to ask you who Ruth's famous great uncle would be, we'd all be scratching our heads without a little bit of foreknowledge, which I happen to have the foreknowledge, so I'm not scratching as hard. But that famous relative of hers, you find out back in the book of Exodus, chapter number 6, verse 23. Again, a very short genealogy, but it says, and Aaron took him Elishabeth, daughter of Abinadab, sister of Nashon, to wife, and she bare him Nadab and Abihu and Eleazar and Ithamar. Aaron the high priest married into the family that was going to end up producing the lineage of David. So there's also just on the fringes, there is actually also the priesthood there. They're not part of the priesthood because the priesthood belongs to the tribe of Levi, but that there's that line right there. When we go over to the book of Matthew, chapter number 1, we have the list, the genealogy leading up to Jesus. As a matter of fact, let me go ahead and turn on over there real quickly.
Matthew
chapter number 1. Matthew chapter number 1 literally begins verse number 1. The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And then verse 2 says, Abraham begat Isaac. And Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Judas and his brethren.
Isaac is 20 years old today.
I'm sorry?
Isaac is 20 years old today. That's my grandson.
Ah. All right, then.
So it's birthday day. And I got another grandson whose birthday, and he's 41.
Okay, then. All right, so anyways, you get this genealogy that goes all the way down through here, and it comes down to verse number 16, and Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. Now, this traces Jesus' genealogy from Abraham down through Joseph. Now, obviously, he's not actually Joseph's child, but Roman law established that if you pick up a child, you are claiming that child as your own. So since Joseph picked up little baby Jesus, he established him as his child. He didn't have any other children yet, so he established Jesus not only as his child, but as his rightful firstborn child. And in so doing, whatever Joseph would inherit, that would be going to Jesus. Jesus would get the double portion. Any other brothers and sisters would only get a single portion. But then when you turn over to the gospel according to Luke in chapter number 3, Luke chapter number 3, help if I get out of chapter number 2. Luke chapter number 3, we got a nice long genealogy here, beginning in verse number 23 that runs all the way down through verse number 38. 23, and Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, which was the son of Heli. Now, what's the difference here? Why is this guy's name Heli when Matthew records it as being Jacob? Well, the fact of the matter is the reason why it's Heli here is because that's actually Mary's dad's name. And what we have here is Mary's side of the family being given to us. Now, if I can track it down here real quickly. And of course, I'm not going to be able to spot it instantly like I would like to. Zerubbabel. Anyhow, Mary actually, she descends, here it is, verse number 31, which was the son of Mela, which was the son of Manan, which was the son of Mattatha, which was the son of Nathan, which was the son of David. David had another child by Bathsheba. You had the first one that was born and died. Then you've got Solomon, the second born. But he also had another child with Bathsheba named Nathan. And so what happens is, Nathan is David's descendant. Nathan's descendants would actually begin to intermarry with the priesthood. And we know back in chapter number 1 of Luke that Mary had a cousin named Elizabeth and Zacharias. And Zacharias was a priest. So that's how the family just kept intermarrying with the priesthood. I believe a lot of them also were marrying in with the high priest and all that. But what this does, though, is that, see if I can find it real quickly here. Probably won't be able to check. Oh, Jeconiah, there we go. Jeremiah, captive, and all the nobles of bring in this place.
There were some twins Cronia. Of Judah.
I'm sorry?
Was there one of the twins of Judah?
Yes. There was the two sons by Tamar, which according to Matthew chapter number 1, we find that Tamar was one of five women that are actually mentioned. Is this me? I despise broken idol. I'm trying to look up real quick a verse. The reason why this is important, like it is, that we have Matthew's genealogy of Jesus and why we have Luke's genealogy of Jesus, both from Jacob's side of the family and Mary's side of the family, is number one, once the temple was destroyed in 70 AD by Titus, all of the records of genealogies were destroyed. So one of the hurdles that they have right now in trying to reestablish the priesthood over there in Israel goes beyond just trying to find the perfect red calf and all that they need for sacrifices. Also involves the fact that they can't verify genealogies yet because the record disappeared. But Jesus' genealogy is right here in your Bible that is in front of you. So he can trace it. He's got the claim every way, shape, or form. But the other reason why Luke here matters so much is because when you get over there in the book of Jeremiah, and there's a king for the southern tribe of Judah by the name of Jeconiah. And at one point, God got so mad at Jeconiah that he changed his name to Coniah. He removed the J-E because that stood for Jehovah. And he says, we're taking my name out of your name because you are so wicked. And Coniah, of course, has the birthright handed down to him from his dad. The birthright would continue on down to Joseph, except for one thing. Not only did God remove the J-E part from Jeconiah to make him just straight up Coniah, but he also cursed him, told him that you will not have a son to ever sit upon your throne. Now that kind of flies in the face of what we know for the promise to David, that David, you will not fail to have a son to sit upon your throne. Well, how's God going to do an end run around that? God just kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth, it would seem. Well, no, because we've got Mary's side of the line here, which is royalty, which when she marries Joseph, allows it to be reunited, just like the birthright was actually reunited there with David marrying Abigail. Because Caleb had the right of leadership, but he didn't have the bloodline. And they ended up merging all that because Abigail was from, Caleb, from his line. With Joseph marrying Mary, reunites the lineage there so that Jesus has the claim in every way, shape, or form. Because Joseph had no claim. But through Nathan coming on down here to Mary, who ends up marrying Joseph, now Jesus' line is completely and firmly established. Continuing on real quickly, Mark has no genealogy listed for Jesus because the Romans weren't going to be interested in the genealogy of a servant. John's genealogy is literally in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. That's all the genealogy that was needed for John's gospel because of the fact that John's gospel is written to the whole world. So we've got all these genealogies here. They do play large parts. We see the bringing back in of the priesthood. We see bringing back the promise to the divinic line. All of these things end up being established. So while the genealogies don't mean that much to us, to the Israelites it meant a great deal because, number one, they can trace their heritage, but number two, their names literally meant something. Nowadays, it's like, well, I want to name my child John. I want to name my child Mary, whatever the case is.
How do they do that?
How do they do what?
They name their child something that would be predominant in his life.
It's something that spoke of his character. Go all the way back to Eve. And Adam called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. Didn't say the mother of all living things, it said the mother of all living. So her name became Eve. He recognized, okay, this is what's going to be with her. Nadab, take him for example.
Jacob's name was changed to Israel.
Right.
But in the Bible, why it was changed.
Well,
I still don't know how you would do that with every child.
But you also got to remember.
The only thing you got like 12 kids.
But you also got to remember one little thing there. when this is 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, even though they were a sinful bunch as the rest of us, they still were a little bit closer to God than we were. The gene pool itself was a whole lot purer still, so they could recognize such traits.
Yeah.
And a lot, sometimes, yeah, maybe it was some wishful thinking that, I hope my child will turn out this good. Maybe sometimes it was simply a matter of, you know what, I'm trying to set you up for something special here. As an example, when we found out that we were expecting, you know, we were kicking names around. Helene wanted Grace. Okay, fine. If it was a boy, I wanted Jonathan. And the reason why I wanted Jonathan was because of Jonathan in the Bible. And I wanted to give my son, if that had ended up being the case, a goal. I want you to be a friend. I want you to be someone that people can depend upon. So I was trying to give him a goal. And yeah, I totally agree that there are times when it just makes no sense, such as Abigail's first husband, Nabal, means fool. Okay, who's going to name their child a fool? Well, apparently his parents did.
He was a Jew, wasn't he?
Yes.
Her first husband.
Yes.
And her second husband.
Second husband was David.
So it was just, well, she was too. I'm not thinking of Abigail. I was thinking of the other one that was not, she was more by
Ruth and
she was a Moabite.
Right, Ruth was a Moabite. Who was the Canaanitess? Rahab. Rahab was the Canaanitess one. But still, you know, the names are important, is what I'm trying to get across here. The genealogies, they are important. There's something that can be taught to us if we'll get in the Bible here and we will read it and we'll study it. Find out what's there for us. You know, like I said before, there are no wasted words in the Bible. It's a matter of you and I. We, like I said, this 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, we are that far removed from it. It seems so irrelevant to us. It was so much here. But yet at the same time, if it was completely irrelevant, it wouldn't be in the Bible at all. We need to get back there to study and to see what all is there, what we can get out of it, what we can't get out of it. I mean, even going over there, you've got a faith genealogy in Hebrews chapter number 11. Let me turn there real quickly. Right. Hebrews chapter number 11. Starts off with that famous verse. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, for by it the elders obtained a good report. And then it goes on, once you pick up verse number 4, we've got Abel and how he demonstrated his faith. It was his testimony. Enoch, this is faith's walk. Get down to verse 7, we've got Noah, which is faith's work. Abraham, which is faith's call, so on and so forth, and just keeps on going down. Yeah, while they may not be directly connected at times, because, you know, you do get down so far, and now you're reading about Moses, and then Rahab getting brought up, and then Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel. And then you start getting into deeds that were done and no names attached to it, and so on and so forth. It's still a genealogy of faith, though, that these are things that have taken place. Now, we love Hebrews chapter 11, but honestly, when was the last time any of us sat down and just enjoyed reading one of the first 9 chapters of 1 Chronicles? I'll read about Jabez real quick with his four verses and then just skip on past it. But even with Jabez, it was deemed something was very special about what was going on there, and the faith that he was exercising. So let's not discount genealogies. Let's not discount names. Let's remember that these things are important for us. So anyways, that was a thought that came to mind I wanted to share. Because like I said, with there only being a couple here tonight, we'll go ahead and save the next chapter in our lesson for next week. And of course, I'll be here since Brother Frank's going to be out of town. But does anyone have any questions, comments, concerns?
What was it? I forgot what. My 90-year-old mind slides right off.
That's okay. All right. Well, if you think about it later, give me a holler.